It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 157. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. I am joined by my brother, Matt, to preview the Utah State game. We also talk briefly about if Jimmer Fredette can make it as a Pelican, and what advice Ty Detmer and Charlie Strong might have given NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can find us at loyalcougars.com. You can also find us on iTunes. Tweet the show at BYU_RiseShout, and listen to us right now. Rise and Shout Podcast. I'm Adam. You're Matt. What's up?
What is up?
So, Matt, we have a tweet bag question I'm going to start off with today. Because
tweet bag.
Why not? And we discussed this briefly last week. So if you have not yet seen this, then we can, well, I will give my opinion and you can do it later. Alex Perkins, that's at Super Perks, and I think this may be his tweet bag debut.
Really?
Yeah. Am I wrong? Alex, I apologize if I'm wrong.
I feel like we've seen Alex in the tweet bag before. Mm. I feel like he's a return tweet bagger. Mm.
So I may be mistaken. Okay, but regardless, the question is a good one. On a scale from Joel Schumacher to Tim Burton, how awesome is the show Gotham? Have you seen it yet, the first episode?
I did.
Ah, so have you seen the second episode?
I've not seen the second
either.
Episode
I haven't
yet.
Either, so we're on even ground.
It's very difficult for me to watch something when Monday Night Football is on, and it's the Patriots even when they're terrible.
Well, I can tell you that no matter how scary that second episode of Gotham is, it won't be as scary as the Patriots' performance. Yikes.
The Patriots' performance was just awful.
But to keep us out of dark, depressive states, Matt, let's go back to the show Gotham from Joel Schumacher, and I love the way Alex put it, to Tim Burton. How awesome is the show Gotham?
I just want to make sure we're really clear here on this spectrum. I just want to make sure I understand the values of Joel Schumacher and Tim Burton.
Well, Joel
Schumacher's opinions could vary here.
Oh, if opinions vary, my response to that varying opinion is your opinion's wrong.
Wow.
have you seen the Joel Schumacher Batman movies?
Listen, some people are into that.
Okay. Batman and Robin? Really?
Holy rusted metal, Batman.
Oh, good golly. So, anyway, okay, let's do it 1 to 10. 1 being terrible, 10 being super awesome.
So 1 being Joel Schumacher, 10 being Tim Burton.
Well, see, I wouldn't have Tim Burton as 10. I'd have him more at, like, 9 or 8.
I feel like there's a different franchise here that, in my opinion, beats out Tim Burton. But
Yes. I'd agree with you. But it's Alex's time to shine here. Just tell me, did you think it was awesome?
Oh, yeah. I'd definitely give it a Tim Burton.
I would give it a Tim Burton as well. I was hopeful but skeptical, if you know what I mean. Like, mm-hmm. I love Batman, so I was hopeful, and quite frankly, I came up with the idea for this show. It's a little known fact.
Oh boy.
I wrote a blog post about this on my geeky blog that was only read by relatives. But anyway,
and not necessarily all relatives, just, you know.
No, not all my relatives. That would have been too high a number. But I love the concept, and the guy, I forget his name, I should have pulled up his IMDb page, but the guy that's playing Gordon is pretty awesome. I mean, he sells it in that first episode really, really well. I'm not as convinced about the villains yet, but there's plenty of time for them to develop some of the villains. This episode was definitely about Gordon and a little bit about the Penguin and his boss. Any other thoughts on Gotham?
Well, I think they did a lot of work trying to weave in some of the other characters to kind of give you a taste of what was coming. And
yes.
I think at some points that was a little overdone.
Yes.
But for agreed. A pilot, I absolutely understand what they're trying to do there. They're trying to draw you in and show you kind of what they can do. I really enjoyed it. I will watch more of it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It is, they came up with a cool concept and as of episode one delivered on said cool concept. So yep. I'm definitely hip to that. And as much as some people hated Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I haven't seen season two episodes yet. I actually stayed through the end, and I would have to say, though, Gotham's on a much better start. The trajectory is much clearer in that show than what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started out. So,
I feel like you have a little bit more to work with Gotham than you do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't know.
Yeah, it's they got there in the end. It just took them 20 episodes to get there, which most people aren't going to give you that latitude. I am a Marvel guy, so I'll watch anything they produce, good or bad. So Matt, let's transition into what this podcast is actually about, which is painting.
What?
Oil painting. No, BYU sports.
Happy trees.
Anyway, let's talk about our usual segment that we call Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So, a couple of things in the news, Matt. One of those things is Jimmer Fredette is a Pelican.
Yes, he is.
And I'm not exactly sure the fact that... Let me do it this way. NBA.com had an article entitled Jimmer Fredette has green light from Pelican coaches. And it's not a parody article. There is a team called the Pelicans, which we all know. But do you think, just very face analysis, that things are going to be different? Or do you think this Jimmer Fredette career has sailed already?
I don't know if things will be different. I think he may have a different opportunity there than he's had previously. You know, whether or not he's going to be in a position to take advantage of that opportunity, I don't know. But I do think he's going to have an actual legitimate opportunity in New Orleans.
Yeah, I think he will have a better opportunity than he had in Chicago. I think he will, and certainly better than Sacramento. I think it's hard when you're now in year... you know, five of your career, right? Yeah, this will be his, fourth season. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't happen because I can think of examples where this is true, that you kind of recreate yourself after that. But, you know, it's not a great trajectory so far. And right now, the upside is, what, 20 minutes a game, averaging... you know, 10 points a game. Is that the ceiling now? Which, of course, we might have thought was the floor 4 years ago when he was drafted 10th. Am I too pessimistic with my ceiling?
I think you may be a little too pessimistic with your ceiling, but it's difficult for me to say that you're being unrealistic.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that it's a legitimate place to put it. I think he may still have a little bit of upside left. So I'm still maybe holding out a little bit of Jimmer hope.
Okay. So percent chance you buy a New Orleans Pelicans Jimmer Fredette jersey or jersey shirt. Either way, I'll keep it open to both options.
I'm going to have to go ahead and for the time being, I'm going to have to say that zero. I don't own any NBA jerseys. I don't know that I own any NBA paraphernalia at all.
I own several shirts, Celtic shirts. I still have my Reggie Lewis Celtics jersey, which I purchased a long time ago. I have not purchased a new NBA jersey. I would say, though, Fredette would be, you know, that would be the only one I'd purchase, quite frankly, now that Paul Pierce is not a Celtic anymore. So... but I'm pretty low, maybe 1% chance that I would do that. The Pelicans, are you anti the name Pelicans?
No, but I don't feel great about the mascot. The mascot is kind of freaky looking.
Yeah, I'd say that's it's more than kind of freaky looking, quite frankly. I think they may have I don't even know what to say about it. I my wife is not a huge sports fan, okay? As you know, and I've mentioned on the podcast before, when I said that Jemma Fredette had gone to the Pelicans, her response was just deadpan right off the bat was, "Stop making teams up." And I was like, "Actually, no, that's actually a real team name." And then I showed her the Pelican thing, and she's like, "That is not a real team."
Well, you know the mascot apparently had some work done. They've toned him down a little bit, but it's yeah.
You don't want a psychotic pelican?
He doesn't look as psychotic anymore. He
No,
looks a lot more cartoony.
they toned him down a little bit.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. So also in the news, Matt was there is potential protests on the ban on beards on campus.
Yeah.
And I saw this, Matt, and my first response was, man, some of these guys need to get a life. And this is a guy that loves beards, but I can't imagine protesting beards. But would you protest beards?
Would I protest the presence of beards, or would I
Or
protest
the
a ban
ban,
on
sorry,
beards?
the ban on beards. That would be fun. You know, that would be fun to go then do a protest against beards while they're doing their protest on a
Can
ban
you
on beards.
imagine being the anti-protest to that?
Yo,
I
it'd be
mean,
so much
listen,
fun.
if you get to the point where you're the anti-protest to the beard protest, now you really need a life.
That's true.
I
You have
mean, you've
amped it.
sunk to a whole new level at that point.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I can't
I don't
disagree
have a
there.
lot of issues with facial hair, and so actually, I don't have any issues with facial hair other than the
Except
fact
your
that
inability to grow it.
there we go. See, I knew we were going there, but I've had a beard in my day.
Yes, you have.
I've dabbled with different versions of that. And so I mean, I understand where these guys are coming from. So I mean, it is what it is. I
Keeps
think
your face warm in the winter.
there's probably a lot of people at BYU that wish they could just grow a beard.
It's true.
And a beard isn't what it used to be, so.
Last piece of Cougar in the news, Ty Detmer popped up in the national news because Roger Goodell talked to him and a few other people about some of the NFL's issues. He also talked to Charlie Strong. Let me ask you this question, really not about Detmer. I just wanted to ask you this question. Percent chance the NFL is in the bind they're in from a PR perspective if Charlie Strong were the NFL commissioner?
Zero.
Zero, right?
It'd
I
all
mean,
be out. These guys would all be out.
yeah, it'd just be like, kicking people out, suspending them for the season and whatever else. I did think it was interesting just when Dick Harmon's piece in the Deseret News about that said, that Goodell seats out Ty Detmer and Charlie Strong. Like, I don't know why those two were, the on his speed dial, but I did think it was kind of interesting. And quite frankly, both of them could do a much better job than Roger Goodell.
I'll tell you what, I heard an interview here on the radio where they interviewed Mac Brown. So they asked him, what do you think about this idea that we're recruiting all the wrong players and all this stuff because Charlie Strong has basically kicked off all these star players from out of these guys he recruited. And he said we were recruiting the right people. It's hard, when a new coach comes in, people start kind of testing the waters, and it's, a lot of these guys weren't necessarily sold on Texas, but may have been sold on a coach. And when it didn't work out that way, they acted out and other, and these kinds of things. But at the end of the day, I mean, those are the personalities in the program. But, you know, it's also good job security if you're the new coach. You say, hey, well, listen, I know we're 3 years into this and I still haven't turned it around, but I had to kick half the team out.
Right.
So, I mean, you got to give me a little bit more time to rebuild here. That's a decent job security approach. But I also think, you know, you can't fault a guy for, you know, dealing with discipline problems in this way.
Well, and we stay away from almost all serious discussion on the show as much as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, Charlie Strong's approach to how his players treat women is just not how the rest of college and pro football has worked for the past
ever,
right? His approach is a zero tolerance policy, which is probably where certainly other college programs should have already be there. The NFL has different issues because it's a employer and there's, you know, negotiated contracts with the union and stuff. But I just thought it was interesting that Strong was and Detmer were pulled out, despite the fact that these guys aren't the prototypical person associated with college football, if that makes sense. Which is probably why they were picked out by Goodell, as he tries to stop doing things the moronic way they've been doing them. So, anyway, so let's talk. There's a game this week, Matt.
Oh, real game
against an in-state rival.
Ooh
yeah,
little right. Rivalry week.
A little rivalry week. So this, of course, rivalry does not take the same angst as maybe some of the other rivalry with the team a little farther south than Logan. But it's still there. Do you consider this the rivalry game of the year, if such a thing exists for BYU?
I have to pick a game on this schedule, yeah.
But do you consider Utah State, from your perspective as a fan, a rival? Forget about location for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do as well. I'm the location's part of it. But when you've played a school as many times as we've played them, it becomes a rivalry of some kind, right?
Yeah, there's trophy involved. There's some history there in a couple different sports, and so yeah, I think that it's not the same as the relationship with the University of Utah, but I'd say it is a rivalry game.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It just maybe not as high up the list. One of the things that's interesting about the rivalry that means nothing to almost any of us watching, listening to this podcast, because we're not old enough, is how lopsided the rivalry was before Lavelle Edwards, and how lopsided the rivalry has been in the post-Lavelle Edwards time period. Okay.
Yep.
So 1976 was the year I was born. Utah State has beaten BYU and played not every year. There was some gaps here, but has beaten BYU four times since I've been alive. So, and it's, I'm not trying to talk trash, though it certainly sounds like I'm trying to talk trash. It's really a matter of Andy Roddick, and I think I said this a year ago when we were talking about the same rivalry. Andy Roddick once was asked during the peak of his career about his rivalry with Roger Federer, and he said, it's not a rivalry. I've never beat him. Right?
Right.
And the Utah rivalry, quite frankly, was not much of a rivalry during most of Lavelle's tenure because Utah, for most of that, just wasn't very good. Right? It became, when Ron McBride came and there came some close games and some victories both ways, that enhances the rivalry a lot more than a bunch of lopsided wins one direction or the other. Right. So the way I view the Utah State rivalry, it's a rivalry, but not, it cannot be in the same context until there is more back and forth or close dramatic finishes over and over again, like there have been with the University of Utah, with a few exceptions on both sides.
Yeah, intrigue in the media and those types of things, and special jerseys really can only go so far.
Yes, agreed. So Matt, let's talk about predictions for it. We'll do our usual over-under, okay? So over-under, we'll start with Taysom Hill because we always start with Taysom Hill. Over-under 115 yards rushing.
Over
115 yards rushing, okay. Over under 215 yards passing.
215. Over. Ugh, that's a lot of offense.
Over. That is a lot of offense. I am going to take over on the rushing and under on the passing, but we'll get to our final predictions here in a minute. Over under 1.5 sacks for the BYU defense.
Is Chucky Keaton going to play?
Yes, but they're going to play both quarterbacks. That's what has been said.
Yeah.
Now, BYU has not recorded a sack in the last two games.
I'm going to take the over here because I'm just feeling crazy tonight.
I am also going to take the over. I think we've had some close calls on sacks in the last couple games, and I think if they can generate that kind of pressure, I don't think the offensive line of Utah State is of the same caliber as the two lines we just played. Not that I'm saying they're the greatest, but I think this is a step down from an offensive line standpoint. Matt, Jamal Williams, okay? Let's talk about Jamal for a minute.
Let's talk about Jamal.
So he is, in some ways, maybe frustratingly for some fans, he has had 60 rushes so far this year and only 2 receptions. So that's 62 touches, okay? Taysom Hill has ran the ball, if you take out his sacks, about the same number of times, if you take out the sacks. Now a few more. Sorry, I did my math in my head wrong. Has run the ball probably 10 more times on some of them scrambles, but most of them designed runs. Do you feel that is the ratio going for this game and forward in the season, or do you think over time there will be a correction where Taysom is less a percentage of the run game and Jamal or another running back take over more of the load of the rushing game?
I think as the season goes on, Jamal will start to see a heavier workload. And some of that will be a function of the teams on the schedule. And also I think at some point you gotta, when you get into some of these games against, I hate using Savannah State all the time as the example, but when you get into those kinds of games, there's just no need for Taysom Hill to be carrying the ball that much.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So I think you have to have some real conversations around that. And then the other thing is the more Taysom Hill runs, the more defenses are going to try and focus on bottling him up, and open up opportunities on options to get the ball to Jamal.
Yeah, agreed. And I thought after the Houston game where he touched the ball 29 times, I thought, wow, okay, we really turned a corner. And then he touched the ball 13 times against Virginia. And I think some of that's just game flow, right? What Anai and the coaching staff, and then on the option plays, what Taysom decides to do with the ball, right? So mm-hmm. Some of that is not necessarily, it's just what the defense is doing. I do think in this particular game, we're going to see a lot of Jamal. That's a prediction. But I think we're going to see a lot of big runs, a few big runs by Taysom as well. So over under, we both said Taysom would have 115 yards rushing. Over under 90 yards rushing for Jamal Williams.
I think we're going to be under here.
I'm going to go over. I think this is going to be a rush heavy offensive game for the Cougars. I think it's going to be definitely a rush-heavy game. So let's talk a little bit about what this game means before we get to the predictions, Matt. On Saturday morning, or let's put it to Sunday sometime, new rankings are going to come out. I believe I know both of us what what we're going to choose as far as how the game outcomes. Where does this game, is it failure in this game to be tight, like some of the last couple games have been tighter than expected? And how bad do you need to beat Utah State at home in order to make a dent in the rankings?
Well, I think if you really want to make a dent in the rankings, you've got to really wax them. And I'm not even sure where that term comes from. But I think you've got to put up
wax
a real
on,
big
wax win. Off. Is that from Karate Kid?
Maybe. But I think you've got to put up some real big numbers when you look at where BYU is at this point in the rankings and what teams are ahead of them. The second piece to that is also, and I think this is going to be true from here on out if BYU keeps winning, is they're going to need some of these teams to start losing games.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that has to happen, right? If everybody wins, it becomes much harder to move up.
Right, but the good news is a lot of these teams will start beating up on each other in conference play, and I think that helps BYU's chances. But I think for this particular week, if you want to have a real big impact, I think you've got to really thoroughly beat Utah State.
Yes, I agree. I mean, the line is 21. And I think you've got to beat them double digits at least, and probably over 20 points to really make a really big dent in the rankings. Let's finish our predictions, Matt. Final score prediction of Friday night's game against Utah State.
I'm going with a BYU win here. Final score 35-7.
35-7. I like it. So Jeff Zagarin's rankings has Utah State at 116. Now, granted, he throws in all of the FCS teams as well. So taking some of those guys out, he's still top bottom 20 of the country so far this year. And has BYU not super high as the 52nd team on that ranking. I think when you see a difference like that, that 21 point line is probably even too low. So similar to you, I'm going 41-10 as the final Ooh. Score. And I think we just, there's going to be just some big runs. And if for some reason they become more capable of stopping the run than I think they're going to be, then he's going to throw it over the top and the big plays will come that way. But I anticipate 3 to 4 really big offensive plays against Utah State and potentially even in a couple of those in the first quarter.
Wow.
So I don't think this is going to be close, and I don't think when they score the 10 points, it may be late in the game by the time they get them.
So, I mean, do you run the risk, especially East Coast fans, of falling asleep in the game that you just described? I mean, it's a late night, BYU's up.
Oh, yeah,
long
totally.
Commercial break.
Totally, but in the end, the number of eyeballs on the game in the third or fourth quarter is not as important to me as the difference of the score. I think BYU has the last two games, they were favored by quite a bit and won a lot closer games than what the pundits would have thought, right? Now, Virginia and Houston are not bottom 20 teams, right? So mm-hmm. Utah State, depending on your ranking, is one of maybe the handful worst third or fourth, teams in the country. So I think this one you can't at home against Utah State not deliver a knockout blow, I think then people start looking at you as that they just haven't had, they haven't beaten anyone that was any good. So we can't give them credit for barely beating a Utah State. But if this was Utah and they weren't very good, I'd be a lot more nervous about this game being closer. I just don't think Utah State, the rivalry means the same as it does against Utah on either side.
Yeah, I think that part's true. Now, have you seen the helmets?
Which helmets?
The helmets they're going to wear Friday night.
The BYU helmets.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen the helmets. I've been busy with some other stuff this week. So
I just saw it this evening. The picture I saw showed a white helmet with the royal blue, but it was the kind of embossed stretched Y logo on the side like you get on the blackout helmets.
Ooh,
so it kind of
nice.
Comes off the helmet a little bit. It looked cool. I know it's going to be, you know, it is the royal out or whatever.
The royal out.
Well, and I think that, you know, Utah State fans like to have a good time with this. Like, well, yeah, I mean, of course you can't wear the Utah State blue when they come to play you. you know, there's that kind of fodder, I guess, that's out there. But I think it's cool that BYU's getting into this, you know, mixing things up a little bit on the jersey front. I think players enjoy it. It clearly helps sell merchandise. And, you know, it can be fun.
So we've got a question on that. We've talked about this before. So this will be repetitive to longtime listeners, perhaps. But maybe it's been a couple years, Matt. I don't remember. Andre Hutchins, that's at AC_Hutchins on Twitter, says, will BYU ever bring back royal blue as a permanent color? Yes, no, and reasons being. So, Matt, you want to take a first crack at that one?
I wish that they would.
But they're not.
I don't think they're going to.
Yeah, I love the royal blue. I wish they would. I would vote if they like put it to a fan vote. I'd vote royal blue in a second, but I'm not going to. They're not going to put it to a vote, and they're going to keep it. I think it's a merchandise thing, you know.
Listen, let's just be glad they got rid of that weird tan cougar stripe.
Oh gosh, yeah.
You know, I saw a highlight tonight. I was watching watching the BYU women's volleyball game, they were showing part of an E60 on Justin Tuck.
Oh, okay.
And they showed a highlight of him sacking a BYU quarterback in Provo. I think the quarterback was, I want to say that was the Matt Barry game. I think that's who it was. Anyway. But they showed him sacking a BYU quarterback in not the Bibs jerseys, but the ones that were the solid blue and then had like the tan and blue stripes and the white sleeves.
Right, right.
And like it took me a second for it to even register with me that, oh yeah, that was us.
Yeah, it's and the unfortunate thing is one of the best, you know, best seasons in BYU history, or at least. I wouldn't say one of the best. I should say a very good season in BYU history is the 2001 team, right? And is that the year before the Bibs? I may be getting this wrong because the Bibs came. It started in Lavelle's last year, right?
Yeah, I feel like the Bibs made their first appearance in 1999.
Yeah, I think you might be right. So anyway, but those 2001 highlights all have the stupid jerseys. And it just, you're sitting there like, ah, like, it's a good year. Why did you have to ruin it with that look? But anyway, so we're both fans of the Royal Blue. Matt, let's...
So, yeah, the Bibs started in 99. And then they moved from 2000 to 2003. They had the white navy blue tan combo. They got rid of the Bibs.
Yes, and I should know this because I was at the press conference when they released them, and I was covering the team in 99.
No,
so yes,
actually, in 2000 to 2003, they went straight. It was like a straight. At least the home uniforms were all dark with the tan accents. And then it was just in 2004 where they did the white shirt and blue sleeves and blue shirt with white sleeves.
Right, right.
And then they moved back to the they got normal again in 2005.
Yikes. That's wow. So Matt,
Yeah.
I wanted to end on two things we'll hit on pretty quickly. Dr. Nick sent us a tweet bag question via email. I wrote an article on loyalcougars.com about how, from a statistical point of view, since Bronson Cavusi's been out, the pass rush has been pretty minimal, at least statistically. He asked, Broncos has historically been very good at getting pressure with unusual blitz schemes. Is the transition to Nick Howell as the defensive coordinator the cause of BYU's inability to get pressure, even when blitzing? So I'm going to rephrase a little bit, Matt. Could you, if I had not told you Bronco was calling the plays this year, can you, as a guy that's more defensively minded, tell? Or does this feel like, yeah, this when what's his bucket was the defensive coordinator? Why can't I think of his name right now? That got fired.
Jaime Hill?
Yes. It did not, even me, I was like, this isn't a Bronco defense. You know, the blitz packages, the pressure, it's not the same. Can you tell a difference with Nick Howell?
There's clearly not as stark of a difference between Nick Howell and Bronco Mendenhall. I think there is maybe some difference, but I think for the most part, Bronco, over time has evolved in the way that he calls a game defensively. So I don't know that I could attribute differences that we see this year to anything really more than that. I think probably the real big impact here is having to shuffle personnel around and not having Bronson Cavusi the way that you thought you were going to and having to make adjustments to what you're calling as a result of that. I think that's probably the more significant factor here.
Yeah, you've got an inexperienced core of linebackers, right? And we do not have and I think I mentioned this last week on the podcast, we don't have a defensive lineman who can create pressure on their own, right? Mm-hmm. The way Cavusi did when he played that position, Jane Jorgensen, there have been BYU linemen that could do that, who could create a pass rush beating their man one-on-one from that D-line position. We don't have that guy, so therefore blitzing and or, sending Cavusi or Fua or somebody with speed is the way you're going to generate pressure in this particular group. And I just think the way the personnel are is more responsible, similar to what you said, than the difference. I can't tell the difference between what Nick Howell is doing. I'm sure there are others that are more defensively, analytically minded than me that might be able to tell you, but I can't tell the difference. Last tweet bag question, our last topic of this week's podcast, Thomas Horick, and that's at Thomas Horick? Horick? How am I saying that?
I don't know how you're saying it, and I don't know if it's right.
Yeah, that's right. Thomas asks, in your predictions last week, you didn't give a percent chance BYU beats Stanford in the Fiesta Bowl. So last week we gave it a percent chance we thought they would get to the Fiesta Bowl based on if they were undefeated. Matt, if we faced Stanford in the Fiesta Bowl or, a top Pac-12 team, let's say, or a top power conference team, what percent chance can we beat one of these teams?
That's
because
tough.
This will be a better team, whoever it is. Say we make the Fiesta Bowl, it will be a better team most likely than any team BYU will have played the entire year.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, would you give them, let's do over under 35% chance of beating them.
If it's Stanford?
Yeah. We'll stick with Stanford.
I'm going to go ahead and I'll give them an over.
We'll give them an over. Let's see. I think after last week, I have a lot less faith in our defense than I did a week and a half ago than I did 2.5 weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think I'd go over, but I would definitely think whoever that team is, Stanford is the team we're using as that stand-in right now, would be favored to beat BYU.
Now, oh, I think they would be favored, yeah.
Now, if BYU starts really rolling and, like, kills everybody, goes on the road and dismantles Central Florida, goes on the road and dismantles Boise State, then things may look different if and when they got to that bowl game, just because the perception would be very different than it is today. But based on what we know today, I would say whatever team, Stanford is the team we're talking about, would be favored in that game.
Well, yeah, I mean, right now, Stanford, for example, is allowing an average of 6.5 points per game. You know, but they've played UC Davis, Army, you know, and then a close one against Washington and a low-scoring game against USC.
Yeah.
And a loss. You know, I think BYU can compete in this teens level, and I think they could be competitive there with teams in that range. And so if that's really where Stanford is, I think BYU can play to that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think, for example, if you put us against Oregon, I'd feel a lot less confident.
And we'd have a little bit more trouble against a team like Oregon.
Yeah, with the offensive weapons they have, I just don't think our defense has the horses to stay up with that, which is not an indictment of any kind because Oregon's offense is quite awesome. But I do think this year the defense, if we had this year's offense and last year's defense, I'd feel much more comfortable about our ability to win a game like that against a Stanford or somebody in that realm.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, it's been fun. It's been a podcast. Second one in a row I've done while traveling and from a hotel room, so that's something.
That's pretty cool.
That's something. And but of course,
taking the show on the road.
We're taking the show on the road, Matt. I mean, I've now done the podcast from three different states in the last 3 weeks. Huh?
Pretty crazy.
Huh? Three different regions of the country, even. So I now need to do one on the extreme West Coast or something.
Let's do it. Hey. Yeah. Let's get a bowl game out there.
Yeah, there you go. Or it's the Miami Beach Bowl. But anyway, thanks for downloading and listening. You, of course, can check us out on iTunes if you're finding this via loyalcougars.com. You can tweet at the show anytime you'd like, at @BYU_RiceShout. You can email us questions, adam@loyalcougars.com. And, of course, we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!